Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich from Crime Talk. Thanks for watching. First on the docket, an update on the Lori Loughlin case. Second, the Tennessee State Trooper we talked about last week has been fired. Third, the Tennessee legislature has said there's a no camping zone and you're going to want to know where. Fourth, a Georgia State Trooper has been charged with murder. Fifth, let's talk about a creepy stalker dude. Next, federal agents arrest a Florida man in connection with a missing Georgia woman whose toddler was found walking around on the highway. Seven, cops rescue victims of human trafficking, help us solve a cold case, and finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk. Good day, aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. First, if you haven't already done so, we would ask that you hit that little subscribe button, hit that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we put up new content or go live like we will tomorrow. And as always, leave us a comment about all of the cases we discuss. First on the docket, a Lori Loughlin case update. As you may recall, the college admission scandal is coming to a close. And remember, Lori Loughlin, she is coming up with sentencing this Friday with her fashion designer husband, Mossimo Giannulli. That's right. Now, prior to the court imposing sentencing, a pre-sentence investigation report is prepared. And in the federal system, there are federal sentencing guidelines that are taken into consideration, which are just one factor the court has to consider when making a sentencing determination. Well, the federal prosecutors in filings have detailed their recommendation to the judge. And the prosecutors are requesting that Lori Loughlin spend 2 months in prison and her fashion designer husband serve 5 months for paying $500,000 to bribe their daughter's way into college. Now, the United States Attorney also has to be able to justify why these sentences are appropriate. As you may recall, some very minor players and people that accepted responsibility up front received prison sentences, and they were about equivalent to what the prosecutors are recommending on the case of Lori Loughlin and her husband. So, given the greater amount of money and the outright fraud that was taking place with Loughlin and Giannulli, with the high dollar amount of some $500,000 and the outright fraud that was taking place, since both of the daughters were trying to get on the crew team, that's right, the rowing team, and they've never done it in their life, you had to know that something was just not right. So the prosecutors now have to kind of defend their recommendation that they're making to the court. The prosecutors did say in their pleadings that Giannulli was the more active participant in the scheme, while Ms. Loughlin took a less active role, but nonetheless, she was fully complicit. Now, the defense had maintained before the defense had asked to change their plea from not guilty to guilty that all the payments they believed were absolutely legitimate donations and accused prosecutors of hiding crucial evidence that could prove the couple's innocence. Well, the judge really rejected that idea, and then the defendants decided to change their plea to guilty. Now, most federal sentencings that take place, the judges are not limited to the sentence that can be imposed. Ultimately, these are federal judges, and they should determine what is the appropriate sentence, taking into all the appropriate sentencing factors under 18 U.S.C. 3553A, the federal sentencing guidelines, and the individual characteristics of each defendant. Now, that's usually up to the judge, and the federal sentencing guidelines, although not mandatory anymore, are a certain starting point where the appropriate sentence is fashioned. Then the court can look at what's the maximum penalty, and the court could, although they'd have to justify it, a maximum penalty in any case. And the judges can also go lower, or they can do what they call a variance, below the recommended guideline sentence and impose a less severe punishment. Now, Probation in federal court is never that likely. In fact, it rarely occurs. If you've committed a federal offense, you have gone big time and you are more than likely going to prison, even if it is, like in this particular case, no more than 5 months or so. Needless to say, the defense will be arguing for the stipulated range. Now, in this particular case, Laughlin and Giannulli have what they call an 11C1C, which is basically a stipulated sentence, which is very rare. The court can, in fact, reject this plea if he doesn't think that the sentencing recommendation or stipulation that he's bound to is appropriate. Now, I always find this interesting. Judges say, no, this is too good of a plea deal. I'm going to reject it. And when I say too good of a plea deal, I mean for the defendant. I've never had a judge say, wow, this is such a severe punishment and sanction to a defendant, I'm going to reject it. Never seen that. We will have to wait and see how sentencing goes, since both of the defendants will be appearing on Friday for sentencing. We'll see if the court orders an immediate remand or if he will allow them to surrender, which is not uncommon in the federal system, assuming you're not a drug dealer or using guns. If those two situations were involved, you would be immediately remanded into custody. And of course, if you follow the Hollywood news, you know that Laughlin and Giannulli have downsized from their much larger estate to a mere paltry $9 million estate, which apparently both of her kids are upset about because, well, they like the old house better. I would say to those two kids, get a job. We've tried to help you so much, we wound up going to federal prison. Get a job, kids. Next on the docket, ladies and gentlemen, remember the Tennessee State Trooper that we talked about last week? There was video of the trooper getting upset at a young man who was videotaping another state trooper conducting a traffic stop. Instead of just letting it go, where the gentleman could, in fact, simply videotape, which is not a crime, there's nothing to prevent anyone from videotaping an interaction between a citizen and a police officer. Well, Trooper Harvey Briggs couldn't just let it go, and he let this young man, who could be possibly characterized as somewhat of a punk, get the best of him. And he ripped off the young gentleman, Mr. Andrew Golden's, mask. Well, guess what? The officer Briggs had been placed on 2 days of suspension early last week, and he was ultimately terminated for unprofessional conduct, which it was. I guess I'm just a little surprised that all the police officers that have been fired lately for the most minute things, when normally it would take a 6, 8, 10, 12 month investigation before they could really determine what happened. Apparently, these videos can make things much faster, and it is the best evidence that we have of what actually took place. It's unfortunate after 22 years, Mr. Briggs lost his career over something so insignificant and petty, but yet as a public servant, if you don't like working with the public, being a police officer may not be your calling. If you have anger management issues, being a police officer may not be your calling. Next on the docket, ladies and gentlemen, the Tennessee legislature has made a no camping zone, and you're not going to believe where that was. That's right, no camping on the state capitol. So after 2 months of people protesting around the clock, the Tennessee legislature passed a bill last Wednesday that would make it a felony to camp out on the grounds of the state capitol. Now, who is out camping on the state capitol grounds? That's right. Apparently, there have been daily and nightly racial justice protesters out there, and they decide to stay there throughout the night. So the legislature, instead of meeting with them, which was the protesters' original request, the legislature said, oh, heck no. So they passed a bill that would prevent protesters from camping out in front of the state capitol. Now, lawmakers have criminalized so-called unauthorized camping, as they say, in the hopes that the governor will sign the bill soon. The protesters' demands were simply that they wanted to meet with the Tennessee governor, Mr. Bill Lee, and the governor has declined to do so. Now, the protesters believe that it is the people's property and that they have no right, the legislature has no right in passing this legislation to prohibit the conduct. Now, the ACLU has yet to decide whether it will in fact sue. They're simply asking the governor to veto the measure. And of course, the act of defiance by the Tennessee legislature has only proved to attract more protesters. Now, I have said this before, ladies and gentlemen, that everyone has their First Amendment right to protest. And when you start destroying other people's things, whether that's the state, the federal government, or individuals, you are no longer protesting. You are committing vandalism. You are committing criminal mischief. You are potentially rioting. That's a crime. Your First Amendment rights end when you start damaging other people's property. Now, here in Denver, for example, our state capitol looks like complete crap. Protesters have spray painted it. The governor let it go, and now they've determined it will cost $1 million to clean up. Now, we also had our own set of campers right across from the Capitol as well. Now, the mayor said, well, we think that's the state's issue. The governor said, no, I think that's the state, a city issue. And ultimately, the city came in and cleaned up our little homeless camp in front of the Capitol. Now, I get it. If you are homeless, you have nowhere to go, you camp. However, when there's a health issue, the government is going to try to get you out of there. And if anyone has been to San Francisco or LA, which I have been to both in the last year, it is absolutely disgusting. So I get where the legislature in Tennessee is trying to make this a health and safety issue, because you can't have people out there camping on the state grounds, but clearly it is retaliatory to the protesters. They're not damaging any property. I kind of agree with them. It's probably the people's yard. We'll just have to wait and see if anybody can figure it out. If you do figure it out, will you let somebody here in Colorado know? Because frankly, it's getting a little disgusting down there. Next on the docket, a Georgia state trooper has been charged with murder after a fatal traffic stop involving a black man. That's right. A Georgia trooper was fired and charged with murder Friday, a week after he shot a 60-year-old man who allegedly tried to flee a rural traffic stop. The president of Georgia's NAACP chapter called the slaying of Julian Edward Roosevelt Lewis another chilling example of a black man being killed unlawfully by a white law enforcement officer. An attorney for Lewis's family said that the trooper initiated the traffic stop over a burned-out taillight, and Lewis was almost shot immediately after the trooper forced his car into a ditch. Mr. Lewis apparently never got out of the vehicle, and the investigation will show that mere seconds after the crash, he was shot to death, shot in the face, and killed, according to attorney Francie Johnson. Lewis was a carpenter who recently helped a local ministry finish a construction project, Johnson said. He said Lewis's wife told him her husband didn't own a firearm. Johnson told the press that the information that he was given was provided by the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, which arrested 27-year-old Jacob Gordon Thompson on charges of felony murder and aggravated assault. The Georgia Bureau of Investigation said Lewis was fatally shot on August 7th after a chase in rural Screven County, about 60 miles northwest of Savannah. According to the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, the trooper chased the vehicle down several country roads before performing a maneuver that forced the car to come to a stop in a ditch. At some point afterwards, Thompson fired a single gunshot that hit Lewis, killing him. The Georgia Department of Public Safety said it fired Thompson after he was charged Friday afternoon. He has been a trooper since 2013. Thompson's attorney declined to comment on the specific case, but said he believes the trooper has an excellent character. We'll have to see how this case progresses. Hasn't been a whole lot of coverage about it, but it's a little surprising that, one, someone would go in a high-speed chase over a burned-out taillight, and two, that even once the car was stopped, that the officer felt that he had to fire his weapon. Clearly, a lot of poor decisions were being made by everybody involved on that case. Next on the docket, let's talk about a creepy stalker dude. That's right. The cops have thwarted an apparent kidnapping attempt at the home of WWE superstar Sonya Deville. They claim that the suspect is an obsessed fan who was armed with a knife, zip ties, and duct tape. Our creepy stalker dude is a guy by the name of Philip Thomas. He's 24 years old, and you can take a look at him here, and we'll give him the presumption of innocence, but he told police that he had been planning this move for about 8 months. It's alleged that he parked his car nearby church late Sunday night and walked to Deville's home, where he cut a hole in a patio screen, waited for several hours, then entered the residence around 2:45 a.m. Thomas set off a house alarm, which startled Deville, and once she realized there was an intruder, she fled the home with another person and called 911. When the cops arrived, they found Thomas still in the home. He was arrested for attempted armed kidnapping, armed burglary, aggravated stalking, and misdemeanor criminal mischief. Creepy stalker dude was an obsessed fan with a mission to inflict harm. Apparently, creepy stalker dude was so obsessed that although he had never met Deville, he had stalked her on social media. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we have talked about this. We don't need creepy stalker dudes in our life. And if you come in contact with somebody, let's say maybe you're working with them, maybe they ask you out on a date, maybe you're going to meet them after being on some sort of app on the internet. But guess what you should do before you go meet somebody that could be creeper stalker dude? That's right. You run a criminal background check and you go to crimetalksearch.com to do that. And you sign up for a background search subscription. In that subscription, you can obtain as many background searches as you want. You get to do it anonymously. And a report that searches millions of public databases is prepared literally while you wait. That will include information on potential creeper stalker dudes, social media, emails, phone numbers, criminal history, arrest records, property records, bankruptcies. Listen, everyone has a creeper stalker dude out there. Find him before he comes to your house in the middle of the night. All right? Go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a subscription. You'll be glad that you did. You will be absolutely satisfied. Next on the docket, more potential weird, creepy dudes. That's right. Federal authorities have taken into custody a man purporting to be the last person to see a missing Georgia woman whose 2-year-old son was found wandering alone last month in a shirt and a diaper in a South Florida parking lot. We brought you this story last week. Federal authorities have arrested Shannon Ryan on 2 counts of lying to federal officers. It's not immediately clear if the arrest had any connection to the disappearance of Layla Cavett, the 21-year-old mother whose child was found July 26 in Miramar. The FBI special agent in charge of the Miami office had sought help from the public in locating the missing woman, and he echoed concerns about the safety and well-being of the young missing mother. Cavett was last seen just hours before her 2-year-old son, Camden, was found wandering alone outside an apartment complex in a parking lot. Authorities believe that Cavett and her son had actually arrived in South Florida the day before she went missing and after spending time in a South Broward County community. Her vehicle was found unattended July 28th in Hollywood. In a rambling 51-minute video posted on Facebook, a man who appears to be Ryan says he was the last person to see Cavett. Clearly, the Federal Bureau of Investigation believes that Mr. Ryan has not been truthful, and that's why he is under arrest. As we've stated this before, best advice if you're going to talk to the police, you may want to not say anything. But if you are going to speak with them, you better tell the absolute truth. Otherwise, you can be charged with lying to a federal agent. Remember, Martha Stewart didn't go to prison for stock insider trading. She went to prison for lying to federal authorities. Next on the docket, that's right, cops rescue a victim of a human trafficking ring. The Michigan police rescued a 16-year-old girl locked in a barn, find six other kids in the county in an overall sweep. A special task force of a Michigan sheriff's office located seven missing kids Friday night, including a 16-year-old girl they found in a locked barn. Genesee County Sheriff Chris Swanson said the team known as GHOST, the Genesee Human Oppression Strike Team, swept over the county looking for children reported by other agencies being, quote, off the grid, end quote, or lost in the cracks. Swanson said the barn where the 16-year-old was found was surrounded by barbed wire. It appeared that the girl was being trafficked. The fear in her eyes was real, according to police officers on the scene. The sheriff said they also arrested some 17 people caught up in the sting operation, in which law enforcement officers posed as teenagers on social media. They then set up these meetings with the people, and they were arrested when they arrived. Now, simply doing that is a crime in and of itself. The fact that nobody showed up or did anything, or that the person was in fact a police officer, is still a crime. And we can't feel that sorry for a lot of these individuals, because these police officers in these sting operations make it very clear that they want the other person to know that they are dealing with someone underage. I've handled several cases like these over the years. And if you are engaging in a chat with somebody and they say they are underage, stop, okay? Stop. Don't send pictures. Don't say you want to meet. Stop. It's wrong. They're children. Don't do it. And I'm telling you, it's the best advice you'll ever get. You don't want to go there, because guess what? If you go there, you're going to jail. And if you're convicted, you're probably going to prison. And unfortunately, one of the arrested in that sting was a firefighter who had previously been a police officer at several agencies. Now, next on the docket, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to try and help solve some cold cases. I have talked about this previously when we've talked about cases where they've kind of just, well, gone cold. They've hit a roadblock. No new information is out there. And I am a firm believer, as someone who has handled the defense of cold cases, someone knows something about every case out there. It's just simply a matter of talking to the right people. So we are going to try and bring you a new cold case at least a couple times a week, and maybe somebody will have some information. So whether it is on YouTube or whether it's a download on our podcast, people will be able to hear the information and maybe give it to someone, and maybe it'll have information. Our first cold case is a gentleman by the name of John Doe. For obvious reasons, they don't know who he is. But what we do know is on April 9th of 1989, human remains of a large male were found in a tobacco barn off of Kentucky State Highway 22, about 7.5 miles west of Dry Ridge near Williamstown, Kentucky. The victim had been shot twice in the back of the head with a .22 caliber weapon, and then he was stripped of all of his clothing. Additionally, his hands were severed from his arms. Forensic scientists determined the deceased to be a white Caucasian male between 25 and 35 years old, and he was approximately 6 feet 5 inches tall and weighed approximately 220 pounds. He wore his medium brown hair in a crew cut with short sideburns. The victim died approximately 2 weeks prior to being found. The case is obviously being treated as a homicide. Now, the photo that we're putting up, and for those of you on the podcast, you won't be able to see it, obviously, but this is what the rendering of the police believe the man looks like. And they would certainly like to give some closure to his family. If anyone has any information about this case from Kentucky going back to April 9th of 1989, you can contact the Kentucky State Police, specifically Regina Wells, the DNA database supervisor, at 502-564-5230. Someone knows something. Someone is willing to tell. Maybe it's out of fear. Maybe it's out of an unwillingness to get involved. But somebody has told another person over a drink at a bar or a family member that they're aware of this. Let's help them solve this case. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Well, before we get there, let's take a look at our dumb criminal contestant winner of the week last week. That's right. This was a tough call. We had some very dumb criminals. The competition was stiff. And our winner goes to Nicole Paris. That's right. The mother who thought it would be a good idea to tow her child and a friend who had gone on a bike ride, were a little exhausted. The bikes wouldn't fit in the car, so let's just put a towel in the hatchback and tow them. Well, of course, until your young child loses control and wipes out and tells the police officer he wants mom prosecuted. Congratulations. We will find you and send you your winning, that's right, a dumb criminal contestant of the week mug. Congratulations, Miss Paris. It's all yours. You've earned it. Our dumb criminal contestant of the day is a 26-year-old male that the police would like to speak to. His name is Mr. Kelvin Barnes, and he allegedly, although we'll take a window and you can tell me if it's allegedly, pulled up to the drive-through window at a restaurant at about 11 p.m. with unknown passengers who became belligerent while placing an order. The employees later told law enforcement that Barnes had threatened to start a physical fight in front of the store, then walked back to the drive-through window and forced his body through the drive-through window. Now, take a look at Mr. Barnes. He is going crazy. That's right. So instead of just being a jerk, instead of just being that guy who's probably drunk, coming through the drive-through, being a jerk, no. He goes back, breaks the threshold of the building. That's right. And if you do something with the intent to commit a crime therein, what is the crime that we have committed? That's right, burglary. And every idiot knows that businesses have video everywhere. So Mr. Barnes, you are our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Congratulations. We'll see if you can hold out your stupidity to be our dumb criminal contestant of the week on Friday. Ladies and gentlemen, that's all we have for you today on Crime Talk. I know it was a big docket, but there is a bunch of crime going on out there. We will see you tomorrow, and we will also be going live tomorrow, 6 p.m. Mountain Time. And immediately after that, we will be going to our Crime Talk Patreon members. If you'd like to join us, please sign up. Thanks for watching. Have a great day.